Hello and welcome to the Great Lakes Analytics and Sports Conference Sports Analytics Podcast. I'm Scott Tappa, Director of the Conference, and I'd like to invite you to attend our event July 13th at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point. We have a fantastic speaker lineup taking shape. Please visit www.uwsp.edu/analyticsconference to learn more. Today I'm speaking with one of our speakers, Charlie DeClean. Charlie is a physical therapist with Bellin Health in Green Bay, Wisconsin, and at the Great Lakes Analytics and Sports Conference, Charlie will deliver a talk titled Using Quantitative Data to Make Return-to-Sport Decisions and Injury Prevention. Charlie, welcome.
Thank you.
All right. So tell me about your background. How did you get involved in physical therapy?
So I actually had several injuries as an athlete in my high school years and spent quite a bit of time in physical therapy. And just kind of fell in love with the profession. I loved how it's treating the whole body, but my passion really grew as I had to go through the return to sport aspects myself. I had a patellar dislocation several times with a couple surgeries, so I went through a pretty extensive return to sport type of panel that way, and then honestly didn't get that experience when I first got into it, which kind of lit my fire to what I'm doing today.
So what injuries did you suffer? How many could you list right now?
Yeah, I had five patellar subluxations. So all from basketball, actually. But you know, it's funny. It's one of those things that the more you learned about it, once I got in school, you wonder how many could I have prevented if I knew what I was doing back then. And wasn't formally diagnosed till the fourth time it happened. Had a lateral realignment. Just more or less a hot pen burning the lateral retinaculum, and dislocated again about 3 weeks after returning to sport from that one. And then ended up having a proximal and distal patellar realignment. So a little bit bigger of a deal this the second time around, and have had no instability ever since.
Well, that puts all my ankle injuries to shame. although I, like you, I wish I would have treated that better and done a better job of returning to sport logically then. So how did you then gravitate towards the data side of this profession? When did that become something that you really looked into?
So my first job out of PT school, I worked in a clinic that was general sports medicine, and they were really looking for somebody to kind of own that kind of sports medicine. No one was really doing that. They were just general, pure general orthopedics. And honestly, when I started looking at talking with some of the docs of, all right, so what do you guys do for return to sport? Let's say ACL. And they're like, well, we once it's been long enough, and we just take a peek at them, and then we send them on their way. And it was one of those things where honestly, it blew my mind. And then I really started asking around, and just at that time, so this was early 2000s, and I was kind of shocked. I was like, wow, you know, I thought back to my experience. I went through a Biodex test, and somebody at least had watched me run around in a room and do all these different things, but really more symptom provocation more than anything is really what they were looking for when I was a student or an athlete, I should say. And so it kind of just kind of blew my mind. So that I started kind of diving into, we've got to find a way to be more quantitative. And a lot of the studies that are out now, you look back, that's really when they were actually starting to collect their data was back in the early 2000s. So, I was there for a year, and honestly, once I really started diving into it, I wanted to get back in Green Bay, and that's when I started with Bellin. And one of the things that that really, it was a good marriage for me with what I loved and with my current employer with Bellin, is that they love being innovative. So the ideas I had and the things I wanted to do, even though there was cost with that, they were like, go do it. Let's do it. So my big first step was I started with kind of going, all right, I want to see what the latest and greatest right now is being done. And at that time, it was a series of hop tests. So for any lower extremity, we kind of clumped ankles into this as well. But, you know, we started doing the Y balance test for any ankle instability type stuff. But we also did a single leg hop for distance, triple hop for distance, crossover hop for distance, and then a timed 10 foot or 10 meter hop. So it was, at least it was quantitative. The problem was we're comparing to the other leg. So we're assuming the other leg is normal. And what was frustrating is we're still seeing the same amount of re-tears. We're still seeing the amount of kids getting re-injured. It was frustrating. Kids felt better going back. We definitely heard more of a confidence level of people going back when they're ready. But just, it still wasn't good enough. So At that time, Chris Powers was doing his M1 course in Green Bay, and my life just got lit on fire. So for those of you that don't know his background, Chris was actually a physical therapist by trade, and then about 4 or 5 years into his practice, I don't want to say got burned out, but in his terms, he was kind of like he just missed research too much. He loved it. He wanted to get back into it. So he started looking at taking the things that he was doing in his biomechanics lab and just applying that to a clinic setting. And that's, again, when my life went on fire. So he looks at everything more from using research-grade technology and data to make those decisions of when to return to sport. That's when my life got set on fire, what I'm doing today.
So just taking a step back to when you just knew that there was a need to get more quantitative about this, was the issue more of a lack of available data, or was the data there and it was just not either being used or being used properly?
I'd say a little bit of both. I mean, at least it was nice to see when we did the lit reviews that people were trying to be quantitative. They were trying to do something. But even at that time, even the Biodex for an athlete standpoint, we didn't really have normative data at that time of saying, well, what should they be versus left versus right and just scoring 85 to 90% of the other leg. Now there's actually normative data out on that stuff. So it's a little bit of both. It's kind of evolved. I'd say that there was at least something. At least there was somebody trying to be quantitative. The problem was it just wasn't, honestly, it wasn't good enough. And now I feel like we're finally getting to the point where we're seeing stuff come out. The problem is it's not every clinic can do it. I think it's getting better. I should say not every clinic can do it effectively and efficiently so that it's actually cost effective. But for the clinics that can do it, it's the retail rates are just plummeting, which is fantastic.
When you say they can't, is that a matter of lacking the technology or the equipment to properly diagnose and collect the data? Or is it more of an expertise on the practitioner's part?
I think everybody, when you really look at what we're doing, and obviously I'll talk about this in my presentation, but when you really look at what the tests that Powers started to look at and just really trying to quantify, looking at movement and quantifying what's good and what's bad, I think that's a basic skill set that every sports medicine provider would have. So in my mind, that's every athletic trainer and every physical therapist. There's no doubt. To be able to say that's valgus, that's varus, I hope to God you learned that in school. So that's not the issue. I'd say that the ability to actually see it happen is where it gets a little bit costly. An iPad, you can use it. The problem is it's just not efficient to be able to say, like, yes, we use an iPad and we can see that motion. We can slow it down because things just happen too fast, quite frankly. I'd say that people that have been in the profession and seen thousands and thousands of athletes can say they can spot it. But can they spot the close ones that are happening super fast with multi-directional type activities such as cutting? That's where it gets harder. And to say that to be able to have a two-camera high-speed system with a force plate in the floor, that's not something everybody can do. It makes the visit so much more efficient. It makes the data so much more valuable and quantitative. But again, that's where it's just not readily applicable to every clinic in the country.
Sure. So in your profession right now, are there people resisting this or maybe at worst skeptical of this approach to physical therapy?
Absolutely. And I'd say that it's not only just our peers that are being resistant to it, saying like, these are just fancy mirrors and this is just for all that cost, it's not worth it. But also some of the providers, we've got orthopedic surgeons that to this day are just not sold that we need to do this much of a structured thing. Some of them are still stuck in their ways of, this is how I do it. This is how I've always done it. And I've always had good outcomes. But quite frankly, when you ask them, what's your retail rate? They don't know it. So the hard part is you want to be able to say, well, I'm telling you that the national retail rate is somewhere between 20 and 30% for ACLs, which is ridiculous. And the stuff we're following, we're finding our numbers somewhere between 2 and 3%. It's hard to argue that. And the hard part is that they see it as a hindrance to their normal flow from an orthopedic surgeon standpoint of, well, but I don't want to change the time that I'm following up with these patients. And honestly, that's just on us on adapting and saying, well, we'll time our visits to work your schedule and we can make it work. But for clinics that are not in our area or surgeons maybe that want to use us, that's harder. I'd say the biggest pushback we get from of our peers is, you know, but you're taken away from getting your hands on the patient. And my biggest rebuttal to that is we still do that. This is just another adjunct of treatment. We're not just sitting in front of a television and watching these people move all day and just pointing things out. You know, if they need hands-on care, that's what we start with. And then once they no longer need that hands-on care, that's where this evolves to. Because in my personal opinion, I'd say the visits that I today found most valuable using video analysis and using EMG, these were visits that just weren't happening historically. This would be, you know, the classic early 2000s, late 90s kind of ACL is they're done at 8 weeks. And then they go into maybe the athletic training room, and or they just are in an independent program and then just show back up in the surgeon's office. And quite frankly, that's why I think so much of the re-tear rates and re-injury rates for most lower extremity injuries are still quite high, is because we're missing out on retraining the way people move. And that's really the biggest piece of it for me.
Yeah. You know, what you just said was really leading into a question or a comment I was going to make, is talking to people from around the analytics sphere in sports, whether it be training or whether it be basketball strategy. A common refrain I hear is that the answer, if you want to call it that, is not just data and analytics. It's a balance. It's a mixture of that plus the traditional methods to complement each other. And so you don't throw out the way that you used to do things and what's worked for many years. But you also have to be open-minded enough to adopt these new ways that can be effective as well. So it sounds like, again, you're not going to just sit there and watch a monitor, that you're actually going to get in there and work with the patient, right?
Absolutely. And I'd say that even with looking at the data, you have to do that as well. You still have to use your clinical expertise and not just say, well, we say on a drop jump, you have to be 60 degrees of hip flexion. Instead saying like, well, you know, for a volleyball player that's a blocker, if she does that, she's going to run into the net. So being able to say, look, we got to use the data to answer the questions that we're trying to answer. What are we trying to get them back to? We can't say that one test works for every athlete, because flat out it doesn't. You know, we're even looking at our cyclists. You know, we film cycling, and it's probably the biggest uphill battle with bike shops, because they all do bike fitting. You buy a bike from them, they fit you to the bike. And there's years and years and years of data that says, here's how you fit a person to a bike. The problem is that person now has a hip replacement, or that person has a long-standing knee injury. And the way you fit them to that bike, they're having pain. They're having problems, or they just feel like they're not being efficient on the bike. Those are the things of being able to film people and go, hey, you know, use your clinical expertise of doing a hands-on clinical examination and assessment, and then saying, here's the changes we have to make, and then being able to use data and research and not only that, but just awesome technology that's really come up in the last couple of 11 years, and then fitting them to do that. No different than a thrower or a gymnast, all those things. Being able to use what the endpoint is, what's our end goal, what are we trying to get them back to, and then scaling all of the data that we're looking at, and not just say, yeah, but the test says I have to get them to 60 degrees. No, you have to fit them for what their test is.
Very good, very good. So what advice would you have for an aspiring physical therapist who really wants to delve into this the data-driven approach? I mean, is this being adopted by most programs these days, or is it still something that's in its infancy academically?
You know, obviously I'm very biased, because I don't even know how I would treat with not having biofeedback from a visual standpoint now. And the EMG, it's almost like cheating. I mean, being able to put an electrode on a muscle and being able to see what it's doing or what it's not doing. It's made making clinical decisions easier, to tell you the truth. And I think there's a lot of ways you can go all out and spend literally hundreds of thousands of dollars on equipment, or you can start with a phone or an iPad and start very simply, or just buy one EMG unit and just start there. But the biofeedback world, I feel like, is something that was big when I came out of school and then went away, and now it's coming back. And then I always say, in the world of wellness, it's such a cyclical thing as well. I kind of feel it's happening right now. To me, we're crazy not to harness the the technology that's at our fingertips. So we spend all this time in schooling, whether it be athletic training, whether it be physical therapy, of playing with all these things that are out there from a technology standpoint, because a lot of us had to do some sort of research project to graduate, and then never having the ability to use any of those tools in a clinical practice. And that's wild to me. That's insane. And the good news is technology is starting to catch up. You know, EMG is probably my best example. The EMG that I got to use in a research project in college had leads all over it. You know, they had to have this cord. It had to be plugged into the wall. I'm never going to use that in a clinic. Somebody's going to trip on it. It's not user-friendly. It was took like 20 minutes to set up. You know, the systems that are out there now are ready to use within 35 seconds. It's crazy. So harness what's out there. Push the limits of don't just go with what you're only taught, you know, but really look out there for, you know, what I consider analytics in my world is using more quantitative data instead of just saying, hey, this is what I was taught, or, well, we just scale this based on manual muscle testing. You know, that's a 4, that's a 5, because that's what I think. And we know that's just not good anymore. Instead of saying we need to be able to be quantitative to keep our athletes safe.
Very good, very good. Charlie, thanks for joining me. Where can people find out more about your work online or follow you on social media?
So today, the easiest way is to go to bellin.org and then just search the Movement Performance Lab. There's some info on there of what we do. Social media, our system has one. It's not doing too much. We have a new building opening here July 24th on the Titletown District by Lambeau Field. And once we have that, we'll have a new social media platform coming out. So we'll push that once we have it.
And that's Bellin, B-E-L-L-I-N, for those of you who don't live in Wisconsin and may not know the business well. Thanks, Charlie. And again, Charlie will be delivering a talk called Using Quantitative Data to Make Return to Sport Decisions and Injury Prevention at the Great Lakes Analytics and Sports Conference. Thanks for taking the time to speak with me today, Charlie.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. The Great Lakes Analytics and Sports Conference will be Thursday, July 13th at the University of Wisconsin Stevens Point. Visit www.uwsp.edu/analyticsconference for details, and make sure to follow us on Facebook and on Twitter at @analyticsconf. See you next time.